Our scripture this evening is found in the book of Daniel, chapter 3, reading verses 13 through 18. Daniel chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, and the flute, and the harp, and the sackbut, and the psaltery, and the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." I think it could be said this evening that all of us have a rather natural fear of fire. One of the things that we have probably learned early in life is that fire is uncontrollable. If you just get a little bit of it going, it doesn't seem satisfied to remain small. It multiplies and spreads and grows and multiplies some more, until we are made aware of the fact it is beyond our ability to control. Another thing we have learned about it is the simple fact that not only is it an uncontrollable matter, but if we come in contact with it, we'll find it to be a very painful experience. We have heard in past history of the age of fire, but in truth we live in a new age of fire. It is a thermonuclear age, an era of explosive fire. And we fear such an age, and with good reason. For we have been made aware of the fact that in the testing, as well as the actual use of nuclear warfare, the fire is so hot that it has the ability to turn sand into glass, to turn steel into liquid. In fact, in those tragic areas where it was used as a weapon, it was observed that some of the victims, not those near the white hot ball of fire that came initially, for there was nothing left there, but even those in the outer regions where the fire reached them, were so affected that those who wore patterned clothing had the patterns on their clothing burned just like a picture onto their flesh. We fear fire so much it would probably be our last choice of ways to die. Recently, while visiting the Tower of London during this past summer, that infamous spot in British history where so many people lost their lives, most of them lost their lives in the form of hanging, or they were beheaded. And I have thought to myself in time since, well, bad as it would be to have to die in this manner, That would probably be more merciful than being burned at the stake, as many of the early martyrs of the church were exposed to. No, if we were to make a choice tonight of a way to die, I doubt that anybody in this congregation would wave their hand and say, sign me up for the stake. If I'm going to go, I want to be burned at the stake. Men have always feared fire. This is not something new with our age. We've always feared fire, even back in the days of King Nebuchadnezzar. He used fire as a means of punishment. When he wanted obedience to his commands, he threatened fire as punishment for disobedience. Also this summer, while in East Berlin, we went to the Pergamum Museum there. And imagine our surprise to find there in communist East Berlin one of the most amazing museums I've ever seen in my life. Just to give you an idea of the kinds of displays they have there, in this one room so vast it defies description, they had one of the gates of the Babylonian Empire from Nebuchadnezzar's time, from Daniel's time, from the time of the three young men we're talking about tonight. The actual gate was there, and I stood under that gate where the men we're going to talk about tonight stood under and walked through, the lesser gate of the kingdom of Babylon. Yes, Nebuchadnezzar was a real figure of history. It is no myth. It is no fable. He was there, all right. And I'll tell you, if I had been there, I, for one, would have been afraid to disobey him. My children are here tonight, and fathers never like to admit they're afraid of anything, you know. But I admit in front of them and in front of you that I, for one, would have been afraid to have disobeyed this man called King Nebuchadnezzar. And the reason why I would be afraid to disobey him was because he had a king-size barbecue pit for problem people. And I wouldn't have wanted to be one of his problems. Amazing as it may seem to you, people usually obeyed him. Yes, sir, King. Whatever you say, King, I'm going to get right to it. Get it done right. He didn't have too much problem with insubordination in his kingdom. Anybody who started to give him any kind of back talk or problem at all, he'd say, just a moment, I don't think I heard you. Turn on the furnace, boys. Now, what was that you said? And immediately, he had compliance. And they were ready to do whatever he wanted them to do. People obeyed him. But tonight, I want to tell you about some exceptions to that rule. And the exceptions are three young men named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Oh, it is one of the most familiar stories in the Word of God. And once in a while, I have to reread it for myself, just to remind myself that I am still serving the God who delivers people out of the fiery furnace. These three young men were three fine Jewish lads. They had been kidnapped and taken from their homes and brought to the kingdom of Babylon. And because of their affiliation with another man named Daniel, they were able to obtain a place of prominence in the kingdom. For we all know the story of Daniel and King Nebuchadnezzar. And Daniel was a favorite of the king. Anybody that was a friend of Daniel was a friend of the king. So these three young men were elevated to a place of prominence in the kingdom. And even though they weren't in their homeland, they were making their best of a bad situation, and things were going along reasonably well. That is, until one day, the king set up a new idol to worship that the Bible tells us about. And he issued a proclamation saying that he wanted all of his leaders in the kingdom to worship this idol. We do the same thing now in some of our forms of government throughout the world. It's called a vote of confidence. In other words, if you're still for the old king, if you're still on the king's team, when the music plays, I want you to fall down and worship this idol. But just to kind of ensure that I have your confidence, I want to tell you this. If you don't fall down and
worship my new idol.
When the music plays, I'm going to throw you in the fiery furnace. So he got quite a good vote of confidence. When they set up all the programs and got it all ready to go, and the music started to play, everybody fell down and worshiped the new idol. They were a smart, intelligent group of people. They said, if the old king wants us to get down and worship his new idol for a while, what's the harm? It isn't going to be anything to us. As soon as the music stops, we can be back on about our business. So they all fell down and worshiped the idol. All did. Except for three. They weren't too smart. No, they weren't too clever. Not too swift, you'd have to say. These three Jewish boys, they wouldn't bow down. Of course, we're aware of the fact that a very important part of their religion, their faith in God, was that there was only one God. And he was the Lord God Jehovah. And they refused to bow down and worship any other God. For them, there was just one. They felt if they bowed down and worshiped any other God, gave subservience to any other image, it would be a direct disclaimer of their faith and belief and trust in their own God. So they apparently talked it over. Said, fellas, now this isn't going to be too easy. This is going to be a tough one. The easy thing to do would just be to kind of go along with the crowd so that we continue to be identified with the in-group in the kingdom of Babylon. You know, we want to be with the smart set, the beautiful people. We want to be there where it's all happening. So we had better kind of go along with the program, and when the music comes, we'll kind of linger around the back of the crowd, you know, and they won't see us bowing down, but we'll kind of give it a quick bow and back up again, and everything will be all right. But these were apparently sensitive, spiritual young men, not looking for an easy way out, or even a hard way out. They weren't looking for any way out of their relationship with the Lord. They were interested in maintaining a strong and abiding faith in their God. They were interested in giving a testimony to all who would look upon them that they were servants of the Most High God and were not ashamed to tell it. They should have said, don't be a fool. Kind of go along with the crowd, even if you don't mean it. Do anything to avoid hurt or embarrassment. I mean, if you're at the office party, just carry around a glass of ginger ale. Then everybody will think you're drinking. But of course you won't be, so there's nothing wrong with it. Now that's just being smart, isn't it? Because if you didn't do that, then you'd have to be explaining to everybody all evening why it is you don't drink. And after all, who would want to be explaining why they weren't drinking at a party like that? I mean, shouldn't we really do everything we can to avoid hurt and embarrassment? You know, I mean, when somebody comes on with the lewd joke, shouldn't we just kind of go along with it and yuck it up with the rest of them? I mean, we know we would never tell anything like that ourselves, but I mean, after all, you don't want to be a sore thumb standing out in the crowd, do you? I mean, when you're out with a guy on a date and he begins to get too familiar with you, I mean, after all, you don't want to leave the image that you're antisocial. You don't want the word to get around, you know, that you're not a girl with a sense of humor. I mean, you know, you want to be accepted. So, what's the harm? Really? What's the harm? I mean, if you shave a little bit on your income tax, the government takes too much money anyhow. They don't spend it well. I could spend it a lot better than they spend it. Why can't I just kind of modify the report a little bit to save me a few coins here and there? I mean, really, really, what's the harm? The harm is, little things add up. Not to mean that the things I've just mentioned here in passing tonight are little things, but when we are called upon to take our stand, when we are called upon to show our true color, it's such an easy thing to say, well, it's a little thing. I'll take a pass. Really, what's the harm? We visited the Russian War Memorial in East Berlin. It's quite a sight to behold. It commemorates the fact that in Hitler's battle with Russia, when he tried to move in to Russia and seize the country, in that one battle, the Russians lost 20,000 men. But they won the battle. And the way they won was not just due to their own valor and their own bravery and their own courage and their own strength, but it was due to a very small thing. A snowflake. One started to fall, and another, and another, and another, and another, and millions of little tiny snowflakes. By themselves, absolutely harmless and insignificant. But massed together by the millions and billions, created a formidable wall of ice and snow that even Hitler's great armies found impenetrable. They lost the battle. Even as Napoleon had lost it years before in trying to defeat Russia, a little snowflake and a great army went down to defeat. And I tell you, my friend, tonight, whatever that little thing is that comes across your life's pathway where you would be tempted to say, it's just a little thing. What does it matter? The little things of life massed together soon become the great issues of life and could be the cause of your fall and your destruction. Learn early in life to take your stand. To those who say, really, what's the harm? I say to you, if you know it's wrong and you do it anyway, man, to you, that is sin. What's the harm in going along with the crowd? Doing things because everybody else is doing them and justifying them? Ask the Watergate crowd. And tonight from jail cells and places of isolation, they'll be able to tell you what's wrong with just going along with the crowd and justifying it because everybody's doing it. If you want to know what's wrong with going along with the crowd? Ask the Italians of Sicily tonight. When an organization years ago called the Black Hand, the Mafia, began to emerge as a formidable political force in their area. Ask them what the harm is of just going along with the crowd. This area of Italy soon found itself in the grasp of this organization. And it still exercises great control, not only in that country, but in many countries of the world. I tell you tonight, do not compromise your principles and your God-given convictions for anything in the world, whether they're great things or small things. I tell you tonight, God needs people to stand up for Him and be counted in a world where they tell us it's all right. Everybody's doing it. Everyone will understand. It's okay. It may be okay in their eyes, But sin is never okay in God's eyes. And I'm looking tonight for some young people and some older people as well who have some steel in their backbone, who are willing to stand up and pay the price of committed discipleship, who aren't afraid to say that they stand with the Jesus crowd, who aren't afraid to say that Jesus Christ has come and made a change and a difference in their lives, and they're not afraid to sing it to the housetops. The old life is behind them. They don't want any part of anything that looks like it or behaves like it in any way, shape, or form. They want to be through with the sin business and everything that reminds them of the sin business once and for all. These three young men of our scripture tonight, they dared to be different. Needless to say, their uncompromising stand was not popular with everybody. In fact, their decision was very unpopular with the king. In fact, the king called them in, and I think the only reason he bothered to call them in was he recognized they were three outstanding young men. So he called them in. And he said to them, I'm going to give you one more chance, boys. I mean, you're nice boys. And I know it may just be that you didn't want to get your new suits dirty, getting down on the ground to worship the golden calf. I can understand that. But whatever the reason, boys, I've got a level with you. I mean, I've got to give it to you straight. The next time the music sounds, if you're not down on the ground worshiping the golden calf, much as I like you, we're gonna have to do the furnace number with you, fellas. I mean, all three in the furnace one time, and that's gonna be it. Well, I think he made the point clear. But their reaction is classic. For these fellas said, well, King, that may be so. Maybe that's the way it's going to happen, all right. But here's the thing, King. We're not gonna worship your idol. We can't do it. And if we have to go to the furnace, we'll go to the furnace, but we'll tell you this, God will deliver us. He'll either deliver us, just take us right out of that furnace, or if he chooses to do it another way, we know we'll be with him for all eternity. He's going to deliver us one way or the other. We're going to serve God whatever happens. He'll deliver us. It might not be our way, but it's his way that counts anyhow. And they gave the king their testimony. Verse 19 tells us that the king was full of fury, and he said, all right, if that's the way you want it, that's the way it'll be. And he had the furnace heated seven times hotter than it was already heated. I imagine those boys during this period of waiting were kind of unnerved by the whole program. Been easier on them if he'd have just swept them right out of the palace and taken them right to the furnace and put them right in and been done with them. But they had to wait for the furnace to be heated up. And the truth is tonight, whatever trial you may be going through, it may be the waiting that's the hardest part for you. The waiting. The not knowing the outcome. That feeling of aloneness that you have when you're waiting in a trial. These boys were alone in a foreign land, about to die for their God. But the truth is, they weren't alone. And neither are you. The 20th verse says, and he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning, fiery furnace. These mightiest men. I have to be honest and fair with you tonight to tell you the devil sends his best to bind us and to fight against us. Always has, always will. But I believe that God left this account for us as an eternal reminder that no matter how many of the devil's agents are sent to destroy us, our God is still able to deliver us. In verse 21 we read, "Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and other garments, and were cast in the midst of the burning, fiery furnace." And one of the most important things you'll ever learn about going with God is what these three young men learned here at this moment. Notice here, God did not take them out of the trial by fire. He let them have the experience. He let them think they were going to die. But he said, "Move over. I'm going with you. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you." And I tell you, friend of mine, tonight, this is our hope. God will go with us. He let them be baptized in the fire that we fear so much. But he took the burn out of the fire. There was no permanent injury to the soul. We know the story, that the fire was so hot, the executioners were killed by it. When they threw them in, the fire just scorched their lungs and killed them. But in verse 25, we read, "The king answered and said, 'Lo, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God.'" Well, that was about all the lesson the king needed. And he hurried to let these three young men out of the fiery furnace. For he saw that he was not just fighting against men, but he was fighting against God. The king let them out. And one of the most significant verses in the whole story is shared in this 27th verse. The key to it, for me, is this. It wasn't just enough they weren't burned. It wasn't just enough. There was no injury. But the verse tells us they didn't even have the smell of smoke or fire upon them. As for God, his way is perfect. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. And I leave you with this truth tonight. Somewhere, someone is heating a furnace for you. A fiery trial is probably in your future. But the important thing is, will life's spectators see God as a result of your test, or will they see you prevailing alone? When the fiery furnace was doing its best against the Hebrew children, those who looked saw not just three there, but they saw God in the trial. I say to you tonight, let others see God in your trials, making you victorious in the midst of your trial by fire. There were obviously two miracles that happened here. One was the miracle of obedience. I think it was a miracle these three young men could stand tall as they did and deny the king's command. The other miracle was the miracle of deliverance. And I tell you, God can do both for you tonight. He can perform miracles of obedience in your life until you can stand tall and strong against things you thought you never could. And he can perform the miracle of deliverance in your life tonight. Not delivering you out of the fire, but delivering you in spite of the fire. Why did these young men do it? One reason, because they were faithful. The other reason, because they were smart. They endured this earthly furnace to avoid the eternal furnace. My good news for you tonight is this, my friend. God can give you victory over trial, over defeat this night, if you'll let him, until you too can stand and declare the glory of God in your life, regardless of the little things or the big things that would attempt to dilute your experience with him into something less than his ideal for your life. Will you stand with me tonight?